Do you fear giving up the gospel? There's a lot of opposition to the gospel today, isn't there? We find opposition in the workplace. We find opposition in the media. We find opposition in education, legal opposition, political opposition, media opposition. And you sometimes wonder, in the face of all this opposition, will I keep going? And especially because when we look around us, we see people who professed faith giving up some of that faith, especially in the area of sexual ethics. Others have given up the whole faith. They've apostatized, even well-known Christian leaders. And again, you wonder, will I keep going? Will I persevere? Or will I end up giving up the gospel? It's a horrible fear to have, isn't it? And it has a number of damaging consequences in our lives. It displaces Christ, for example, because with all that opposition, our eyes can tend to be focused on people who are opposing us rather than on Christ who is holding us. It demoralizes us. It leads us into sin because giving up any doctrine or any biblical ethic will inevitably lead to unethical, immoral conduct. It destabilizes us, leads us to inconsistency. We don't know where we are with opposition coming from all sides. We're all over the place and we're unstable in our faith. The fear of giving up the gospel is spiritually and psychologically and morally dangerous. It's a fear we do not want to have. It's a fear we want to get rid of from our lives. And we can, with God's help, and especially using this passage, because this is what Paul is doing for the Colossians. He is seeking to replace this fear of giving up the gospel with a confident expectation of perseverance to the end, with many happy consequences that flow from that confidence. As we've already discussed before, the Colossian church was under attack as well. And it would appear that there were some in the church who had given up the gospel. Hence Paul's words here in verse 23, "If you continue in your faith, established and firm, not moved from the hope held out in the gospel." Some had been seduced, and so Paul here seeks to secure the Colossians' perseverance in the faith. And he does so by bringing the gospel, especially the cross of Christ, to their minds. In other words, the cross of Christ is not just the power of God to salvation. It's the power of God to perseverance too. And so he gives them gospel motivations to gospel perseverance. He directs them and us today to three truths to help us persevere in the gospel and in the faith of Christ. And the first truth we find in this passage is Christ has made peace for you. Christ has made peace for you. You see that in three ways. He says, first of all, you were alienated from God. You look at verse 21. Once you were alienated from God. If you remember last week, we looked at the future reconciliation of all things, the cosmic reconciliation. You see it in verse 20 there. And from that very cosmic idea of reconciliation, Paul brings it down to earth. He makes the cosmic real life. He brings the impersonal down to the personal, the abstract into the concrete, when he says, once you were alienated from God. So he's saying, you Colossians, you were once estranged, separate from God. Maybe some of the younger ones here wonder what that big word means, alienated. Well, I'm sure you've heard of aliens, haven't you? Creatures from other planets and fantasy and mystery books and films. Well, that's really what the apostle's saying here. In relation to God, we were aliens. We were strangers to him. We were from another planet. We weren't on the same page as him. We're very different to him. We were alienated. And that's a common word you find when you hear young people talking and discussing their problems. This sense of alienation, or they might put it like this, I don't fit in. I don't have any sense of belonging. I feel dislocated. And that is a very sad and miserable experience. But what the apostle's saying is that at the root of this widespread sense of alienation in society and culture, this widespread sense of not belonging, of being out of place, is actually rooted in a much deeper alienation. This alienation from one another is rooted in an alienation from God. That in terms of our relationship to God, this is a far worse alienation, a far more serious alienation. We don't belong to him. We are out of place in his presence. We're not comfortable. We've got a sense of dislocation. We have a sense of not belonging there, no right to be in God's presence. Once you were alienated from God, out of step with God, out of place in his presence. And he's saying, if you peel back the layers in any unbeliever's life, you peel back the believers of anyone who's not a Christian, at the very core of every human being is this alienation, this estrangement from God. You were alienated. But he goes further. He says, you were hostile to God. And in a sense, that makes sense. When we are alienated from someone, we are opposed to them. We're not comfortable in their presence. We try and get away from them or try and push them away from us. And that's what the apostle says here. And we're enemies in your minds because of your evil behavior. Two things here, hostile thoughts and hostile works. Enemies in your minds. He's looking now with this x-ray. He's looked inside and he's seen alienation and now opposition, hostility to God. And he says, you were enemies in your minds because of your evil behavior. What's he saying there? He's saying, because you wanted to do evil, you thought evil of God. Their beliefs were driven by their morals. Their desire for immorality drove them to irreligion. Tim Keller, I heard him in an interview recently. He was being asked about what's the first thing he says to a Christian, a professing Christian, who comes to him and says, I'm thinking of giving up the gospel. I don't think I want to be a Christian anymore. And he said, the first thing I asked them is this, who are you sleeping with? And what he's basically saying is that the desire for sin was driving the desire to be free from God. The desire to commit immorality was being driven by opposition in the heart to God. That's what Paul's saying here. You were enemies in your minds because of your evil behavior, evil thoughts and evil works. And it's a vicious circle. Sometimes evil thoughts produce evil works. Sometimes evil works produce evil thoughts. And this enmity, this opposition, this hostility is growing and growing. And what Paul's saying is, you know, we hear today of people saying, well, you know, I'm agnostic. I really no firm beliefs. I just don't know about God. Or others say, well, you know, there's an awful apathy in our culture. You know, people just, you know, they're not hot, they're not cold about God. And what Paul is saying here is, there's no such thing as apathy when it comes to God. There's no such thing as agnosticism, ultimately. You're either for him or against him. You're alienated or his friend. You were alienated. You were hostile. But here's the great truth that he follows up with rapidly. But now, verse 22, he has reconciled you by Christ's physical body through death. You were reconciled to Christ. He's saying, God didn't leave you there. Yes, you were opposed and you were hostile. You were aliens and enemies, but he didn't leave you like that. He came to you. He brought reconciliation to you, and you too reconciliation. And notice it's God that did it. He doesn't say you did it. You made it right. You fixed this. You took the alienation and the opposition out of your heart. No, he says God did it. It's a sovereign, unilateral work of God. But now, he has reconciled you by Christ. And how did he do this? Well, remember these Gnostic heretics, the know-it-alls, they were dead against the body. The body was evil. The body was to be shunned. The body, it didn't matter what you did with it. Well, notice what Paul says here. How were we reconciled? He goes right to the heart. He brings the dagger of the incarnation to this Gnostic heresy. And he says, he has reconciled you by Christ's physical body. There's no mincing as words, is there? There's no kind of trying to round off the corners of the gospel. He's not trying to sugarcoat the truth. He takes this very truth, this precious truth of Christ's physical incarnation, and he drives it like a stake into the heart of the Gnostics. Christ's physical flesh, a real body like our own. He's saying evil works were produced by alienation to God, but reconciliation was produced by Christ's good works in his good and holy body. You were reconciled. Christ has made peace for you, believers. Isn't that a wonderful truth? You think, you know, one of the commentators called this the something's missing syndrome. And he said he's met a number of believers who feel there's something missing in their lives. And so, like the Gnostics, they're looking for something extra, some additional experience, some mystical spirituality, some elite experience. And what Paul's saying is, you don't need something new. You need more understanding of what you already have. You need more understanding of what you already have. You need more understanding of the gospel, more understanding of what you were and of what Christ has done. The more you appreciate how alienated and hostile you were, the more the reconciliation of Christ will fill you with joy and amazement and worship. These words like, but now he has reconciled you, will just expand in your soul so that you think there's nothing missing anymore. Here's all the motivation I need. Or maybe you're still alienated. Maybe you still feel that separation, that sense of not belonging, and you wonder, what is it? Here the apostle saying to you, well, look at this and ask yourself, is this me? Am I still alienated from God? Am I still opposed to him? Well, don't despair. That can be filled, that can be fixed. Not by you, but by God. At the cross, he removed the opposition of God to you, and by faith, he can remove your opposition to God. He's done it. And he's calling you to faith. He's saying, here is a peace for you in Christ's body that can make a huge difference to your whole life. He's saying, persevere in the gospel because Christ has made peace for you. There's a book that I was reading recently. It's a book by Dr. Michelle Seeger, and it's called No Sweat. It's not a Christian book, but it's about the role of motivation in seeking health and strength. Things like how do we keep ourselves going when we're trying to diet or trying to get fitter? And she attacks or critiques two great errors in this book about motivation when it comes to fitness. And the first error that she attacks, she puts it like this, long-term goals motivate us. Long-term goals motivate us. She says, that's actually not true. She says, you know, a lot of people, they start exercise and diet, and what they've got in view is eventually losing like 20 pounds or being able to do a marathon. And she said, most people with these long-term goals, these goals way down the road, they eventually give up. The vast majority. I'm sure we all identify with that. And she says, if your motivation is based on something future, you will not succeed. And so she teaches people to find motivation in the present, in the exercise. It's not, well, I've just got to get through this pain in order to eventually get some success and reward down the road. No, she's saying, unless you're getting a reward in the exercise or in the food you're eating, you will not maintain it. And so she trains people to find that present enjoyment, that present reward, that present satisfaction. And the more we can find that in what we're doing, she's saying, that's what will keep you going. And, you know, the Apostle Paul knew this before Michelle Seeger did. Because really what he's saying to us is, be motivated to keep going with the gospel, not so much because of heaven down the road, but because of the present satisfaction that we can find in the gospel. As we think, I was alienated, I was hostile, and Christ has reconciled me. These truths that are true and present and real today are the fuel for me keeping going day by day. As Michelle Seeger put it, we sustain what sustains us. The apostle's saying the same. We will keep going in the gospel if it's the gospel that feeds us day by day. Gospel perseverance through gospel motivation. He's saying here, opposition to the gospel will make you focus on people. But gospel peace will focus you on Christ. And that will help you keep going. Well, you might say, that's great. We've had a look back. We've seen Christ made peace for me. but what's ahead? What's future? Can we not find motivation there as well? Well, yes, Paul actually goes there as well. He says this, Christ will make you perfect. He made peace for you, and he will make you perfect. He says, now he has reconciled you by Christ's physical body through death to present you holy in his sight, without blemish and free from accusation. Two things are brought before us here down the road. One is Christ will present you. The apostle is telling us everything that Christ did on Easter Friday was with a view to Judgment Day, to a presentation of his people to God and indeed to the whole world. He did this to present you. I'm sure many of us can remember times when we were looking forward to a presentation, maybe graduating, or maybe a military award, or a long service ceremony where we received some recognition, and we looked forward to it, didn't we? You know, the days, the weeks, maybe even longer than that, the months as we waited for it, it kept us going. And this is what the apostle's saying to us is keep going, keep going, keep going by thinking of that presentation. Not a presentation to you, but a presentation of you to God and to the whole universe. I know of somebody who was working on a very long-term academic project and was really finding it difficult in the last months to just keep going and keep going. And so he started watching YouTube videos of graduations in this particular university. And every time he felt his spirit sagging, he went to that presentation. And then that's what the apostle's saying here. Don't let your spirit sag. You know, go to this presentation. Bring it in front of your eyes and get power from it. Christ will present you. But how will he present you? He will present you perfect. Perfect. Three phrases he uses: holy in his sight, without blemish, and free of accusation. You ask yourself, if I've been reconciled to God, what will I look like in this presentation? He's saying, you will have no guilt, you will have no sin, and there will be no accusation against you. It's quite the thought, isn't it? Quite the prospect. He's saying, let this future perfection motivate you. You might say, well, I look at myself, I don't see much perfection. He has begun the work, and he will finish it. But yes, you're right. There's not much perfection at the moment. But it's something like, you know, if somebody's bitten by a snake and an antidote is administered, an antidote that has worked for every single person that's ever been given to, you may feel still horrible and sick and feverish, but you know, within a certain amount of time, I will be perfectly well again. And so you can actually rejoice. You can even look forward. You can anticipate. This antidote has always worked. I need fear nothing. That's what the apostle's telling us. You don't need to fear this moment. It's always worked. It's always perfected people. Christ will present you, and Christ will perfect you. Christ will make you perfect. Therefore, persevere in the gospel. The second error that Michelle Seeger critiqued in her book was this one. I'm sure you've even said it to yourself. If it's not hurting, it's not working. And she said what she's seen in all her research is that when people exercise, they feel they've got to like kill themselves if there's to be any hope of actually getting fitter. you know, maybe one of these programs like Insanity that leave you writhing on the ground in a pool of sweat. And, you know, unless I do this, then there's really no hope of losing a pound or, you know, cutting a minute off my time. And actually what she found was that people who try to do extraordinary things, again, their motivation disappeared. But people who just did ordinary exercise and ordinary everyday life, even things like taking the steps instead of the elevator, parking their car further away from the shops and walking further, just building it into every day, these were the people who ultimately got fitter and healthier and lighter. Ordinary. In the ordinary. And again, I believe this is what Paul's doing here. He's saying, take into your ordinary life these truths. Christ will present you and Christ will perfect you. Bring them into your life as often as you can, as much as you can, and they will give you perseverance. Opposition to the gospel demoralizes us, but Christ's perfection stabilizes us and purifies us. Well, you see, we've looked back and we've looked ahead. We've seen Christ has made peace and Christ will make us perfect. What about the present? Is there something for the here and now? And that's where Paul goes next. And he says this, Christ calls you to persevere because he has made peace and because he will make you perfect. He says, therefore, persevere and use this call to persevere. If you continue in your faith, established and firm, not moved from the hope held out in the gospel. Notice what he says, continue in your faith. Persevere in faith. And in this translation, it says, in your faith. In other words, the subjective response to the gospel. But actually, other translations say, in the faith. And it's really connected. We will not persevere in our faith unless we persevere in the faith. If we give up any of the faith, the objective word of God, an ethic, a truth, a doctrine, a chapter, a verse we don't like, every time you try and chop something out of the faith, something gets chopped out of your faith. So he's saying, persevere in the faith. And then he says, persevere in stability. Notice his words, established and firm. Established means a firm foundation, a good ground, like we're standing on a good, solid rock. The second word there, firm, actually means with a good grip. So you need two things to stand firm. You need a good ground and you need good grips on your shoes. You can have the best rock in the world, but if you're standing there with slippery shoes, you're not going to last very long, are you? And so he says, get good ground, get good grip. And then he says, thirdly, get good grip. Not moved from the hope of the gospel. He's saying, have this determination, this resolve to persevere. It's not to be half-hearted. There's actually a book out called Grit by Dr. Angela Duckworth. She's a psychologist, and she was doing lots of surveys on people who graduated, and especially focused on West Point, trying to figure out, helping the armed services figure out who will get to the end of this course so we don't waste money. And they've always tried to do testing to figure this out, and it wasn't very successful. Some of the most talented people flunked out along the way. Some of those with very little talent got to the end. And as she went through various researches, she found this, grit is more important than gifts. The people who maybe had less talent, less strength, less education, yet who had grit, who had determination, who had perseverance, they were the people that got to the end. And therefore, when we hear this call, persevere, continue in the faith, hear it and to give you grit, to give you that determination, not just good ground, good grip, but good grit. That's what will keep us going. Determination, resolve. And so we want to ask ourselves, don't we, am I on good ground? Do I have a good grip? And do I have good grit? Or am I on shaky ground with slippy soles and short of grit? Use this call of Christ. With the call comes power to strengthen you, to persevere. Gospel opposition destabilizes us. Christ's call to persevere stabilizes and secures us. This has got to be wholehearted. Jeff Bezos, he left a very high-paid, high-status Wall Street job to start Amazon because he had a passion for online bookselling. And he gave a talk to graduates at Princeton University, and he said to them this. He said, if you don't have passion for what you're doing, you will not stick it out to the end. But if you have passion for what you're doing, you can get through anything. You have a passion for the gospel. This is what Paul is driving us to. Gospel motivations to produce gospel perseverance. Not just our own effort, our own resolution, our own techniques. No, gospel motives to gospel perseverance. That's what will keep us going. Yes, there's lots of opposition that makes us afraid, that displaces Christ, that demoralizes, that potentially destabilizes, but God has provided plenty in the gospel. He calls you to remember Christ made peace. Christ will make you perfect, and Christ calls you to persevere. Therefore, persevere in the certain hope of Christ's peace and Christ's perfection. Those he saves are his delight. Christ will hold me fast. Precious in his holy sight, he will hold me fast. Bought by him at such a cost, his promises shall last. He will hold me fast.